This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We've alluded to it earlier on, tensions rising between the United States and the country of Iran in the Middle East following the death of Iran's most powerful military commander, General Qasem Soleimani, who was killed by an airstrike ordered by the U.S. President Donald Trump on Friday. To help us navigate this issue, we're joined by Asanda Ngwasheng, who's a political analyst. Asanda, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
How massive is this this issue, or is it just an issue that is receiving just undue attention from the media?
Well, I don't think that it's receiving undue attention. I think it's quite a big deal because Iran is quite a big role player in the Middle East, and of course, quite a large percentage of the global oil comes from the Middle East, and so anything that happens in the Middle East has a global impact on everybody. So it's not a small thing by any stretch of the imagination. I think the thing that a lot of people don't understand, though, is that America and Iran have basically been in a sort of Cold War situation since as far back as 1953, when the U.S. participated in a coup d'etat to take down a popular prime minister and replaced him with, somebody who was part of the royal family known as the Shah. And so there's been tensions between America and Iran since as far back as then. Mm. And so ever since that time, there have been attacks, there have been, actions on both sides. And all that's happened really now is that they've almost escalated to the highest point that they've ever really been in. And I think what's really scary about this particular moment in time is that the strike was actually, instructed by President Trump, who is one of the most impulsive presidents we've ever seen, and who has very few people in his confidence. So globally, nobody really knows what his plans really are. Nobody really knows if he really thought through what he was doing. Mm. And because there's been these tensions for the past, sort of 40 plus years, you're seeing a situation where this is the highest escalation point, and so anything could happen at this point, because these are two countries that have been ready to go at each other for quite a while. And Iran is different from all the other Middle East countries that America has, tried to start a war with, because they have, one of the biggest or the most resourced armies. They've got nuclear power. They've got all kinds of power that most of the countries in the region that America has had conflict with don't have. And so it's quite a significant thing. And I think the one thing that a lot of people are not thinking about is not only is an all-out war between America and Iran highly problematic from an America and Iran perspective. It's also highly problematic, as I said, for the whole globe, because, that's our source of oil. Mm. But particularly for countries like South Africa, where 7% of our oil comes from Iran. And so if anything is happening in Iran, we're likely to see, if that 7% gets cut, that's going to lead to shortages, which is going to have its own, sort of snowball effect. Mm. And so this is something that, whether, countries support America or don't support America, whether they are interested or not interested in the war, we all have our skin in the game. Yeah. Just purely because of the oil that's there and purely because of the trade relations that globally exist because of the oil.
I've been following this story, and I want to confess up front that, I constantly come across it through various reports and different channels. Contradictions. I mean, one of the contradictions is what the Democrats in America say, to say we also did not know, there was no approval, which is procedural. We also don't know the strategy of the president in as far as such issues are concerned. Also, you have an America that has a relationship with Iraq, but the same general was killed in Iraq. The same, general who had a very good relationship with Iran, with Iraq, and then you also have an America through the Obama administration that had managed to subdue, if you know, for a lack of a better word, Iran on issues around you know, the weapons that you spoke about, that you're saying, you know, that's the distinction of Iran compared to the other countries in terms of nuclear weapons and stuff, where there was an agreement with six other allies and so on and so forth. And then, you know, you have a situation where now countries are also divided. Even countries that are allied to the U.S. are sort of, you know, condemning it without really criticizing directly America. And then you have a South Africa that says, whoa, stop it on both sides. You know, just sit down and talk. And it's very difficult for such a climate from the look of things to happen. And to top it all, we don't know what's going to happen and how Iran is going to respond to all of this.
Well, I mean, the difficulty is, as I've said, the role that Iran plays in the region, and its position as a powerful player in the region, means that quite a large number of Middle Eastern countries would actually, if there was to be a choice to be made, they would likely go with Iran over the U.S., except for maybe Saudi Arabia and, you know, well-known U.S. allies. The thing about it is that we can't expect, for example, countries like Iraq, which were like practically obliterated by America, to now turn around and support America, even though, you know, there's claims that one of the reasons why America still has about 5,000 plus troops on the ground in Iraq is because they're training Iraqi troops. And we know that, you know, America had played a very big hand. I mean, it's quite an obvious thing that they were part of putting together the people who were going to be at the forefront of the new parliament. In fact, one of the controversies is that one of the people who was actually in the airstrike or in the car when it was struck, is a former member of parliament in Iraq who turned out to have been a bomber of the U.S. embassy as far back as 1983. And so you've got a lot of, it's quite confusing because the relationship between America and the Middle East is quite a complicated one. And that's why I started off by talking about the relationship with Iran from as far back as 1953, because America has been in the region for so long and it has been tempering and creating all kinds of different factions. And so I don't know that that Donald Trump has the kind of support that he would require to wage a full-on war. But at the same time, we don't know what Iran is likely to do. And because, you know, America has been sort of poking or stoking the fire in Iran, it's highly likely that they could, you know, retaliate with something quite as powerful as, you know, killing America's top, you know, whoever the equivalent of the guy who was killed is. So we are in a situation, I think, globally, where we sort of have to have this wait and see approach.
Yeah, yeah.
Because any movement by either side could really have devastating effects, first of all for Iran and secondly for America, but also just generally for the globe. And we know, of course, that one of the biggest problems is that in the absence of you know, countries being able to attack other countries, they also can just simply attack civilians. And America has, you know, military bases all over the world, and America has Americans who are scattered all over the world. And so this kind of attack puts particularly the lives of those who are outside of America, living in other countries, particularly in the Middle East, at a much higher risk than they were in, you know, before the actual strike. Because not only do you have to be concerned about Iran itself as a country retaliating, you also have to be concerned about, you know, the terrorist groups and the breakaway groups and the, you know, all kinds of groups that have it in for America. I mean, of course, America deserves it half the time, at least half the time or more than half the time. But you have all of these groups which have been raring for an opportunity to go at America, and America has just given them a reason to attack.
Yeah.
You know?
So the decision of the parliamentarians in Iraq to order the U.S. military to leave Iraq, is it something that you think will make an impact, or do you think that the Americans will try and find a way of still staying or keeping their presence in that country?
No, I mean, America has been telling us they're pulling out of Iraq since as far back as when, you know, as when Barack Obama was still the president. So I don't think Americans are going to move out just because there's word that they should move out. But I think that they might be forced to decrease the numbers, which would be a concern for them because they need to be in the region in order for them to be able to respond should Iran decide to do something. And so they basically stuck between a rock and a hard place because they've basically put down this big commitment to war, and now they have to act as people who have declared war. And when you've declared war in a country, you don't then leave, you know, your soldiers to be stationed nearby the country that you've just declared war on. And it makes sense, as I said, if anybody has to pick sides, Iraq is likely to go with Iran. And that's exactly what it sounds like they're doing by saying, you know, all foreign soldiers should be out of Iraq as soon as possible. Because automatically, if you remove the American soldiers, then it means, you know, America has to go to the next base, which is Saudi Arabia, and everywhere else where they have a base in the Middle East for them to actually be close enough to be able to wage the kind of war that, you know, one would expect would be waged. But as I say, it's for me, my biggest concern is not so much as America, because America has declared the war. So whether it's people agree or don't agree, the person they elected to lead them has led them to war. My bigger concern is the rest of the globe that now has to deal with the repercussions of whatever Iran decides to do next, or whatever America decides to do next, or whatever both of them equally decide to do next. And as a globe, we are going to be affected either way. Whether, you know, Iran decides to strike as harshly, whether they start having small terror attacks, whether, like, whatever decision they make, it's going to have an impact on people all over the world. It's going to make the world a lot less secure, because anywhere you are, they are American citizens. And if American citizens are under attack globally, then it makes a lot of places globally, you know, under potential attack. We're sort of going back to the era of the early 2000s again, where you just never knew when the next terrorist attack or when the next, you know, bombing or anything is going to come from.
Yeah.
So Trump has just literally taken us back to that very insecure, very, very frightening time globally.
Yeah. And I suppose Donald Trump does not make the situation easier, because he still insists through Twitter posts that, you know, America is ready to attack at any time. In fact, you know, they are more superior, militarily speaking, just to sum up some of his tweets as well. Also speaking about identifying even some of the places that are protected, you know, areas that are protected from things like war and stuff like that. And some people saying you just don't do that, but he doesn't seem to be bothered.
Yeah, but I mean, he wouldn't be bothered. I mean, can you think of anything that has ever bothered Trump? Trump has always been unbothered, and he's always been a warmonger. I mean, I'm not the least surprised that somewhere in his term he found a way to start some kind of war. Because remember, Trump comes from that era of believing in America's sort of supremacy at a global level. He comes from an era where it's America first. And it's all about always proving that America's bigger than, America's better than, America's best at. And so for him, he sees this as an opportunity to showcase America's greatness. He's not thinking about the casualties. He's not thinking about the destabilization of the entire geopolitical, global political system. He only cares about, you know, that's why he would have Make America Great Again, because, you know, that's what America at some stage was great for, its military might. And so that's what he's emphasizing at this particular moment in time. And remember that he's also facing his own politics internally, having, you know, just gone through an impeachment. And at the time when he instructed for the strike, he was waiting for a decision to be made about whether he's going to be kept or not. And this whole thing, you know, some analysts are calling it one big distraction to make sure that he holds on to power some more, because there are some in America who believe in things like going to war, and who believe that, you know, going to war is about fighting for democracy and bringing democracy to people, and, like, you know, extending American values, which are all lies, because essentially it's all about the money that one can make from rebuilding after the war. It's all about the money you can make from military contracts. It's all about the kind of money that one can make from the business of war, which is not pretty, and it causes a lot of destruction, but also makes a lot of people a lot of money. And the kind of people who are backing Trump, and the kind of people who are fundraising for Trump, and the kind of people who have stood by him are the kind of people that believe in war, that like war, that actually enjoy being part of, you know, military, proving military might. And so I'm not surprised at all that he's part of such actions. It was really just a matter of time.
Okay, we don't have Zamani on the line, but just as a parting shot, I mean, what do you make of South Africa's posture in as far as this issue is concerned, to say that, you know, both sides must exercise restraint, sit down and talk about it? Has the horse bolted, or do you think there's still a chance?
Yeah, I mean, I think the horse has bolted, but it makes sense, again, that South Africa would take a stance of both sides must go back to the drawing table, because, as I've explained, our relationship with, we need Iran for oil, and we have, you know, America's one of our biggest traders. So we can't afford either of them to be at war, because it's going to have a direct impact on our ability to trade with either of them. And some of the kind of stuff that we import from the US, and the kind of stuff that we import from Iran, particularly the oil, is not stuff that's easy to come by. And so it's in our best interest to not call out a specific side and to say both sides are wrong and both sides need to go back to the drawing table and engage. But, I mean, that's not going to happen, particularly because, you know, President Donald Trump is the kind of person who will not back down. I mean, he's proven that time and time again. Whether you follow him on Twitter, or you listen to his speeches, or you know, follow anything he's written or said, he's not the kind of person that's going to back down and apologize and will try and engage in any kind of real negotiation unless he thinks he can win.
Well, Asanda, thank you very much, ma'am, for talking to us. We really appreciate the fact that you made time to speak to us.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.